Bud, welcome back. How you doing?
Well, we spent the weekend watching football on the couch because we picked up a cold somewhere along the way.
Oh, well, that's never. Most of us pick up a cold every Sunday and Friday night as well, so that's magical. I think the wives and our families have, and our lives haven't caught on to it yet.
Yeah,
Friday
exactly.
Night, oh, I'm sick. Oh, and then good for Saturday, and suddenly you're sick again on Sunday. The director of officiating for the CFL, Tom Higgins, joins us, also a former Grey Cup champion. Tom, how you doing?
Very good, thank you. It's good to be with you, gentlemen.
Tom, a few things. Here in Edmonton, of course, Eskimo fans are a little sensitive to the fact that Mike Riley has taken 4 headshots this season. They've resulted in fines, of course, but no suspensions as of yet, Tom. Do you think the fines are getting through, or do you think one-game suspension is something that might be looked at in the future as maybe getting more players' attention?
It's going to start getting to that point when it's multiple. If an athlete does it a second time or a third time, it's definitely going to be double the cost, and or when it finally gets to that point, suspension. Now, suspension is really difficult within the confines of the collective bargaining agreement, and so I don't know that people want to hear it, but there is a culture that is occurring within football, particularly in the CFL. It's the coaches have bought in. The players need to continue to buy in. It's about delivering a blow to the head. It's not helmet-to-helmet occurs constantly, and that's not what we're talking about. Is we're talking about a blow that's delivered to the head. And Mike Riley has had blows delivered to the head. And so it doesn't have to necessarily be with the helmet. It could be with your shoulder. It can be with your forearm. But it's a blow to the head. But I'd like to think that we are making some progress.
You know, Tom, watching the Montreal game yesterday, we saw a couple instances where Montreal had someone free off the edge and they came in and took the quarterback down legally with an arm, and maybe the message is getting out.
I really do think that is the case. Our referees are the ones primarily responsible for protection of the quarterback. And a lot of times they are talking to the athletes about hitting the quarterback in the strike zone. And I think our fans are starting to become a little more educated with, what's allowed and what's not allowed. Incidental contact when a defensive player has his arms up in the air and it hits the head of the quarterback, that's not roughing the quarterback, but if those arms are coming down and there's a blow to the head, it's a little bit different. But I'd like to think we're making strides, but when your quarterback gets hit, I hear about it through all 8 teams and all 8 clubs and all 8 teams that have fans that like to get in touch with me and saying that, you know what, you got to do a better job protecting our quarterback. Well, we hope we set the standard that we're protecting all quarterbacks the same.
Director of officiating for the CFL, Tom Higgins, joins us. Tom, obviously the quarterback, they're in a standstill position for the most part, and guys, their job is to go after the quarterback. Being a former defensive player, Tom, a linebacker who obviously wanted to hit guys, is it going to take some time for players, not that I don't think players were ever taught to deliver headshots per se, but, for the longest time and even now in football, a lot of guys lead with their head when they tackle, so they're not necessarily going for the head, but a lot of times they'll still have connection from the top of their helmet, to the bottom of the helmet, and we see the face mask go up. Does football have to go to the grassroots levels and change how you teach defensive players to tackle, do you think?
Yes, and I think I'm fascinated by rugby. I had some of our children play rugby, and rugby players hit and tackle as hard as football players, and they're not wearing equipment. But it's because of the rules of the game and how they tackle. They put the head behind the person carrying the football, while we put it in front. And I think it really has to change. A couple things has to occur is there is a protection, because if you do not see what you hit, that means your head is down. You need to be wrapping up, and you should be delivering more of the blow with your shoulder than with your head. And it needs to be to the side. You always want to have your head in front, but it's about wrapping up. And I think the culture is such that we have an obligation to any of the young kids that are playing the game that, you put on equipment, they think they're invincible, and for a time there, what we are now saying is a penalty 5 and 10 years ago was deemed to get you a medal and, you know, put you on a pedestal. And I've had many conversations, and each time I see Dave Dickinson, he is liking to what is occurring because, again, a quarterback's in a position they can't protect themselves. So you have to afford him some protection. It's no different than a place kicker and or a punter. They can't protect themselves, so there's rules in which to do so. But I feel confident that we are making strides, and it does. It starts grassroots, that to be taught how to do it properly, and do not imitate people who are they lead with their head. Their heads are down. They throw their bodies. That's not tackling. Tackling is when you wrap up and you grab. And I see the trend. I see it changing, but it's going to take us some time. We just got to be diligent and keep working on it.
Tom Higgins joins us. What kind of feedback, Tom, do you get from the players? Because obviously, you know, people are emotionally invested. Fans usually, I doubt when one of their defensive players ear holes a quarterback, they're emailing to say, you should suspend our defensive player. That's just natural human nature. You know, when your quarterback from the team you cheer for gets hit, then you're going to be up in arms. How much, you know, do you wait till the end of the season? Do you deal with a group of players to look at any sort of changes, if any are necessary? How does that work?
Well, it's ongoing. It's constant. We are putting clips in different categories so that we have them all in place after the football season's over. But the rules committee continues to meet during the seasons, but we'll get together. And, you know, one of the big things is player safety and how can we continue to work to improve the football game. As equipment improves, I think that was a detriment because as the equipment improved, so did the speed and the type of hits that were occurring. And, you know, we're all experiencing it in all sports that, you know, how can we continue to make our sport so that it's as safe as possible? But you're absolutely correct about fans. Fans see colors. That's why the officials wear black and white. We like to see things in black and white, but what really truly happens is everything is gray, and it's the gray area that causes us some angst. And but I'm very pleased where we're at officiating wise. But fans, when they look, and even teams, it's like, well, you know, protect my quarterback, but their quarterback, we should be able to hit them. So it's just the nature, competitive nature of athletes and even coaches that our job is to try to sit back, look at it objectively, and see it for what it truly is. And that's why it is very difficult when you're on the field, and I know that you've had many opportunities to have some discussion with Bud, but technology has really helped us, but it's also helped educate the fan. We have high definition, slow motion, 10 different angles that we can see something, and we can say, oh, definitely, you know, he delivered a blow to his helmet. I can't believe we didn't get that call. That's why after the fact of the weekend's games do we actually take a look at a whole bunch of other clips, and that's where the fines come in and possibly the suspensions.
Tom, in your time as director, is it fair to say that you are seeing the league much more engaged in this issue and in this process, protection of players, player safety, et cetera?
It really is amazing where we have come. This will conclude my sixth year as director of officiating, and from whence we first started, it's night and day. It's when you look back at those, you're just thinking, wow, I can't believe that, you know, that's where we were at. And it's always in looking back that you realize how far you come, where we are today. And I really do believe we are much, much better today than we were 5 and let's say 10 years ago.
What about the Players Association? Are they on side?
You know, sometimes you just wonder that when you have to go and you are protecting players, the Player Association seems like they're always protecting the person that's doing the hitting instead of the person that's receiving the hit. So it's a tough balancing act that the Players Association have because they want to protect all their players. But I really do believe that it's it's a changing landscape that they are truly care about our players, and I applaud them for that.
Tom Higgins joins us. Tom, the instant replay, you mentioned technology has gotten better. As a guy who oversees all of it, do you plan on making any changes? You're pretty happy with instant replay right now.
The instant replay, that system that we have put in place, is superior to a lot of others as far as the NFL or the NC2A, because we have a command center. We have a consistency. It's taken away from the venue. We actually can shorten the amount of time because they're already starting to look at a play that's being challenged by a coach to help the flow of a football game. So there's always tweaks that we can make to the command center. We would like to try to make it simpler if that's possible, but the system is working and working extremely well, but we're always willing to listen and see if there is a way which we can improve it. We would definitely look into it. And I can guarantee you this offseason there have been some suggestions. If it will benefit all of us, we would possibly be making some tweaks to what we can review or not review type of thing as far as the command center is concerned.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. I'm guessing it's not so much how you guys are doing the review, it's which plays would be reviewable. Is there any one play or type of play that fans or players or management has asked you to hopefully put under review next year?
There's something that is rather interesting, and it's occurring a little bit more, and you might be hearing it if you're paying attention. Illegal participation. So it's up to our sideline officials that if you get pushed out of bounds, so if I'm the defensive player and I push the receiver out of bounds, the receiver can come back in the play. But if I were to step out of bounds as a defensive player, I cannot participate. But if that receiver is running down the field and all of a sudden he tries to avoid contact and he runs out of bounds, the receiver cannot participate. That's something that's black and white, but the command center does not have the ability to review that. And so that is on the table right now as an example. Illegal participation, we would like for that to be something that is reviewable. So if you kick an onside kick and the outside man were to go out of bounds, he can't come back in. But if he's blocked out, he has the ability to come back in. But that's something that the command center could actually look at. Now, a couple of years ago, there was a suggestion that the command center should be allowed to review pass interference. Now, that's a judgment call,
yeah.
And it got shot down. It didn't make it past the suggestion that was brought up, because that is not the time or place for the command center to be. We don't want to take the human element out of sport, and we really truly believe that we'd be putting in somebody else's hands. When instant replay first came into being, and Bud would be someone who could really elaborate further on this at another time, I think the officials were like very hesitant in thinking that it wasn't a good thing. Now, there's not an official that officiates football in North America that doesn't think replay is good for the game, because we have the ability to get something that was incorrect on the field right. And so when you think of it in that aspect, I'm not sure that there's can be anybody that could say otherwise.
Yeah, Tom, I would completely support what you've just said, and you are correct that when replay was started in the CFL, there was a great deal of reluctance on the part of the referees to embrace it for all kinds of reasons that we won't go into, but certainly the question of second-guessing what's going on in the field is gone now, and the referees simply want to get it right. And as Jason pointed out, there's probably some parts of the game that we need to look at. There was a great example in the football game last night, a very critical play with a ball that came out on Team B's 2-yard line. And certainly from the replays that I saw, it looked to me like that the offensive player had possession of the ball on the ground. And that's not reviewable down there. It's not reviewable in Canada. So, there are parts that we can look at. And I'm sure over time, we're going to do a better job at getting it right.
And that's the bottom line. We all want to do the same thing, which is just get it right.
One last one for you, Tom. We're a few weeks away from the playoffs. I know you have 5 crews now. You go down to 4 crews. How difficult is it to pare it down from 5 to 4 here in the next few weeks?
It is difficult, and I actually get quite a bit of help. We have supervisors and evaluators, which Bud is a supervisor and evaluator in Edmonton, where I ask them if they wouldn't mind ranking our officials top to bottom. And what we do is from 5, we will go to 4, but as we eliminate to 4, because it's the 4 referees and their crew, but the eliminated crew, if that anybody in that group as ranks in the top half, they get put into the crew of one of the 4 crews that are doing playoff games. Now, to be qualified for the Grey Cup, you have to finish in the top 2 in your position in order to qualify, and then one of the 2 people get selected from that. So one of the things that's fascinating that our fans, I like to let them know, is that our officials are also competing. Our officials are held accountable. Every flag they throw, we get graded. Anytime there is a situation where maybe a flag should have been thrown, that's graded as well. We grade the crews each and every week, and our officials are held accountable. And some guys do a little bit better job than others, but the one thing that I continue to make sure that our officials know is I use this all the time, and it's very appropriate, is, you know, what do you call the person who finishes last in med school? You call them doctor. And what you call a CFL official, he's a CFL official, but there still is a ranking. And so you're always striving to get better, and that's what we're trying to do when we observe them and when we evaluate them. And to tell you, it's a tough job. This is the hard part, to call somebody up. The nice part is to say, hey, you're in the playoffs. The tough part is telling somebody they didn't make it. And they are obviously going to be disappointed, but I let them know that, hey, it still doesn't mean that you are not a top-flight professional CFL official. It just so happens that we had others that performed a little bit better than you did this year.
Tom, I appreciate your time. Enjoy the final few weeks.
Will do. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, Tom.
Tom Higgins, the director of officiating in the CFL. We're going to get into some of those potential changes. I loved his response, though. Pass interference can never, ever, I think, be under review. It's virtually impossible from the angle up there to see, because it's always going to come down to an opinion. I think what they have to do is just keep harping on it to ensure that the guys get in the proper position to make the right call in the field. That's the thing that you want to evaluate. I know you've talked about this before. That's when they evaluate. It's not so much the call. It's, is he in the right position
Yep.
to make the correct call?
You know, it's interesting to hear this from you, Jason, because, I mean, clearly you get it. You understand the difficulty of the job now, and it is so important that we have athletic officials who understand the game. And it, my words when I talk to the fellows is to have a nose for the football, especially in certain positions, the field judge position in particular. You need to have a nose for the ball, and that is to have a sense of what's going to happen on the play and to make an election, go somewhere, and be prepared for the play. And if you really know what you're doing out there, you're going to be right 90% of the times. And if you're wrong on the play, that is being in the wrong spot, your athleticism is going to allow you to get into the right spot to help out anyway. So, you know, it's good to hear that people are getting the message.
Continue on now, Bud Steen Show, brought to you by Mobile One. Did you vote yet, Mr. Steen?
I haven't, but I'm going home, and before our evaluation conference call tonight, I am going to the polling station.
Do you guys vote on who doesn't make it to the next round of officiating? Is it like a vote? Is that how it works?
I don't look at it as a vote, or better put, who doesn't make it. Yeah, we participate, and I've been going back through some of my reports and watching games. You know, really, it's much like the players, who's hot, and it doesn't really matter to me what a guy did in June or July or August. It's what's he done since Labor Day, and how's he performing, and you know, how's he moving on the field, and how is his crew doing? So it's tough, as Tom said. It's really tough. I was on the backside of some of those decisions in my career, and it really burns.
Oh, I'm sure it does. Yeah. It definitely, Barry. Because, you know, guys got a, you know, they've got pride. You want to be there. You want to be in the most important games because I can. And here's the other one. You have games now down the stretch. You know, the Edmonton Eskimos, they're playing for nothing.
Yep.
Right? Like, they got nothing to play for. The intensity of that game when they play BC next week likely isn't going to be the same as the Saskatchewan-Calgary game. Is it harder for an official when you go into a game knowing one of the teams is just playing out the string?
Yeah, there is no question about it. I recall the 89 season very clearly because the last four games I worked were nothing football games. And when I finished my last regular season game, I felt absolutely deflated, done. And as it turned out that year, I ended up working all the playoffs and through the Grey Cup. So, you know, there's positives. If you can keep your focus and if you can keep all hell from breaking loose on the football field in these nothing football games, then you're going to be noticed. So it is very tough to work those games.
A few other quick ones. Does the chain gang on the sideline have any input on calls in the field? That one comes from Ron.
Absolutely not. The chain gang, 30 years ago, the guy working the downs box could call whether or not the quarterback was across the line of scrimmage when he threw a pass. And unfortunately, in a game, a guy made a mistake, and that was gone, and that was it. No, they're completely directed by us, and they just need to stay out of the way so they don't get hurt.
Do they, like, is there communication, though, with them and the line judge as far as,
oh,
you
yeah.
know, balls and where it's out and spots and stuff like
not,
that?
Not necessarily on spots, but there is communication during the game because depending upon where you are, Edmonton is a good example. We put very senior officials on the chain gang, and, in fact, the ball boys in Edmonton are usually on their way onto the field for the CFL. That's where we put our best up-and-coming officials. And there is a lot of talk that goes on during timeouts in that just because we really respect these guys that are on the side.
A few other ones. Rule changes. I know you're part of it. Can I throw this in right now?
Yeah, go for it.
In junior football, one of the rules I love they have in junior football is if, you know, you punt the ball or it's a kickoff, it's into the end zone, rather than just taking a knee, all the player has to do is get to the 1 yard line. If you get to the 1 yard line, you automatically scrimmage at the 20 yard line.
Yep.
Now, if you want to make it 20, 25, to me, whatever.
Yeah, go for it.
That encourages the potential for more big plays.
Well, what it does is it certainly encourages guys trying to get out.
Yes.
And anytime someone, usually your punt returners are smaller players and you've got big guys coming down, who knows, that ball might come out. It could create a very exciting play. Whether or not rules committee is sufficiently forward thinking to advance something like that, I don't know. But hey, let's float it. You know, and while we're raising that, Jason, I'd invite anyone to send us a proposal for a rule change that you think should be adopted in the Canadian Football League. We don't have a lot of time. So let's put an end date on that. You know, text in, send in an email to...
Yeah, email it to me, Gregor, at tsn1260.ca, as long as we have it by next Monday.
Monday's fine, sure. Yeah. And the best one, I'll take it to the Rules Committee, and you'll get a pair of tickets to the game of your choice in Edmonton next year. So we'll need your details. Yeah, I'm sorry it's a long time out there, but as you know, football in Edmonton is done now for 2013, but we will get you to a game in 2014, and it will be much more exciting than the football we've been watching the last couple of weeks here.
Yeah, this is the earliest end to a season for home games at Edmonton.
Yeah, it's
October 18th. It was definitely been a tough year for the Eskimos. I'm curious to see what happens in the offseason. There'll definitely be some changes. Will there be any changes? You know, Edmonton, I can expect some coaching changes for sure, some personnel changes for sure. The officiating crew, and I got to ask you this, Bud, and you know, I watch the NFL games, and I was watching the CFL games. I was noting how the CFL officials seemingly have gotten a lot younger.
Yes.
And the NFL still has a lot of older guys, and I just wonder, when you reach the age of above 55 or to 60, I just wonder if physically those officials can get to the right areas to make the right call. Is there an unwritten rule? Because the CFL used to have a lot of older officials. I've noticed now I don't see that anymore, and I don't see very many beer-bellied referees anymore either.
No, you're absolutely correct. Over the last 6 years, there has been a very substantial change in the officiating ranks. The only limit that we have in Canada is the young folks coming up. And when I say young folks, I mean those who have sufficiently learned the game that they're ready for the speed of the professional game. There still are a few fellows who are nearing the end of their career. There will be changes, no question about it. We have a book. I've got my eyes on three men in Edmonton that I hope over the next few years will get their opportunity to come up and show their stuff. I'm pretty confident that one of them will be on the field next year.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, how did that process, because we start the year with one final one, and a lot of people who don't remember, we start the year with six groups of officials, then you get down to five at the midway point of the season, then down to four to the playoffs, and then it just goes down every week with fewer and fewer groups until you get to the Grey Cup, where that's the one time where it's not, you know, they come from all over, the best umpire, the best side judge, the best back judge, they all come together and officiate the Grey Cup game. Those six guys who were cut early, you usually inexperience a little bit of it. You know, they kind of got to pay your dues. In fact, how does that conversation go when they get put out to pasture? I can't think of any better term for that. Like, did you make the decision, or did somebody come to you and say, "Bud, we think it's maybe time"? How does that go?
I had a conversation with Tom in Toronto one Friday night. We sat down, and he told me that I was having a great year, and maybe it was time, consider going out on top, et cetera, et cetera. It was earlier in the season, so he couldn't make any promises because you're only as good as your last call, and he made that pretty clear. Like, you know, don't mess up, but if you carry on at this rate, we'll see you at the Grey Cup, and that'll be a good place for you to step off the field. And when the boss says that to you, you know it's time. So, I felt I had a few more years left in these legs of mine, but there is no question. Our game is a tough game to work, and we have a huge field to move around on. And you've got to be athletic to be able to move around and get and grab your angles so you can see what's going on. And can you do it at 65? I don't think so. Probably 60 would be tops.